Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now on 96.9 FM, for his weekly spot, we are joined by Michael Shockley and Iceman Insights. Michael Shockley is the senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing all right, all things considered. How about you?
Not too bad. Take two is a lot better than the one that we just deleted.
Yes.
First of all, we've got to remember, we want to remember Newtown and the tragedy that happened there last week.
Yeah, this is our first show since what happened on Friday in Newtown, Connecticut. I'm sure everyone, unless you're living under a rock, you realize what happened, how just absolutely incomprehensible that was. And before we get into our usual nonsense and shenanigans and fun light Iceman talk, we wanted to take a second to remember the victims and send our thoughts and prayers to the family and friends and everyone touched by this. So before we start, we're going to pause for a second. Derek's going to say a little prayer, and then we'll observe a moment of silence, and then we'll look at this show on the road. So take it away, Derek.
Lord Jesus, we just come to you with heavy hearts, just with the tragedy that's happened, and we just ask for your peace and your love and your mercy to be on the families of these lost children and lost loved ones, and just help them to understand, help us all to understand how something this horrible could happen. Just remind us that you are there with us and help us and remind us that you will help us overcome evil in this world. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
So, yes, with heavy hearts, but the one thing about having this radio station, Youth Incorporated, 22 years, been reaching out to youth and young adults here in the tri-state, and it's just nice that we've got a radio station that we can do things like that. We can remember the hurting and do what we can to help those around us.
Yeah. How long has WYIR existed?
WYIR has existed, I believe, since 2005. The ministry started 22 years ago, so around 1980. Three guys. 1990. Good math. Good math skills.
That makes me only 21 years old. Cool.
1990, three guys got together and started a ministry, and one guy's remaining, Andy Fuller. He and his wife, Nina Fuller. And we've been doing rock and roll. We've been doing skateboarding. We've been doing everything that typical churches don't want to deal with, because you got dirty, nasty kids with punk rock hair and dyed hair listening to their nasty hardcore music and breaking their teeth on skateboard ramps and stuff like that. So we've always embraced that aspect of the youth. So
that's cool.
It is cool. We have a lot of fun.
And speaking of crazy, nasty, weird people, let's talk some Iceman hockey.
Yes, definitely. Did you want to pick out any weird? Are we referring to the players or the fanny acts in the asylum?
I think weird tends to refer to the fans more so, but yeah, I guess it could apply to the players, too.
I'm trying to think of any stories I have, but they all go back to the old AHA days, and we'll keep those.
Some of those aren't fit for the air.
Yeah, and plus we have that whole five-year thing, and we want to make sure we get past all of that so that none of us can be held accountable in a court of law. But anyways, first time we've had to say this in a while, rough weekend. We've come off a couple of really nice weekends. Rough weekend, I don't think any of us were surprised. We talked about it last week on the show that missing Alan York, missing Wade McLeod was going to make for a difficult weekend, and traveling on the road is now proven difficult.
Yeah, it was a rough weekend, but yeah, like you said, I don't think anyone expected a 3-0 weekend. We said last week that we would have been happy with 3 out of 6 points, and obviously fell short of that even. But
just to remind, I would have been very excited with 3 points, which means I'm happy with the, you know, one is about what I expected.
Yeah.
I would have thought it was a successful weekend, like above average successful weekend if we did snag a win and on another point on the road.
Yeah, yeah. It was a really tough task. We were talking about the time, especially of the Sunday game at Wheeling, and how it was a 2 o'clock Eastern game, which is 1 o'clock Evansville time. And I was curious to see how much that really happened. So I went to ECHL.com and pulled up the Master League schedule that shows all the games in the league. There's 23 teams. There's 828 total games. And with all of those games in the league this season and all the teams, all the travel and everything, this was the only time all season that any team in the league was asked to play 3 games in 3 days, all on the road, in 3 different cities, with the third game starting before 3 o'clock.
Wow.
It's the only time all season. So it was a very unique and difficult task. And unfortunately, the Icemen went 0-2-1. At least they did get a point. But I guess if there's any solace, I got 2 out of the 3 games right. Because I predicted shootout loss, win, and loss. I got the bookends correct. That middle game on Saturday, not so much.
Yeah, the shutout that you predicted a win. Good job.
Well, missed it by that much. So Friday we started in Kalamazoo. It was a 3-2 shootout loss. Obviously tied 2-2, went into overtime, and then in the shootout we didn't have anyone score. The K Wings only scored 1 in the shootout, but the Icemen could not light the lamp once. And I thought it was interesting. I actually started listening to that game on the Iceman radio network, and then WEOA signal had issues, and so I switched over to the Kalamazoo feed in the third period, and entering the shootout, Kalamazoo's radio guy brought up an interesting point, said that so far this season, and still after not scoring any on Friday, the only two players that have scored a shootout goal for the Icemen this season, Dan Gender and Dale Mahovsky.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. Oopsie. So, yeah, we haven't, still haven't had anyone else other than them score. Yeah, tough.
We haven't been in too many shootouts.
No, there haven't. It was only the third shootout this season, period. So it's just one of those things. You may lose a few of them in a row, and then who knows, you may turn around and get hot and win a few of them in a row. It's just, that's one of those things in hockey. But another interesting factoid about that, in the weekly release this week, Terry Ficcarelli said that there actually still has not been a shootout at the Ford Center.
Huh.
And I looked it up, and he's correct. The Icemen, the last 11 shootouts the Icemen have been in have all been on the road. The last time we had a shootout at home was in
Swander
March,
Ice Arena?
Yeah, March of 2011 at Swander. It was a 5-4 loss to Fort Wayne, so there still has not been a shootout at the Ford Center, which once I got to looking it up, I racked my memory, and yeah, I don't recall one. So
correct me if I'm wrong. Throw me under the bus if I'm wrong, but I believe that 5-4 loss to Fort Wayne, was that when we were up like 4-1 and they came charging back and
it
tied it up? We gave up 3 unanswered goals to go to the shootout and then lost
there it. There was a whole lot of that season.
If it wasn't that game, it was another one.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, that probably happened more than once that season, so You're not exactly a low percentage guess right there. So yeah, we lose in the shootout Friday in Kalamazoo. Saturday, go to Toledo and lost 4-0, got outshot 46-27. It wasn't necessarily that bad. It was actually just 1-0 until the final 3 minutes of the game, and then they scored 1 with 2 minutes and change left. They scored an empty netter after that, and then they added a 4th goal in the final minute. It was not an empty netter, but that loss ended the team's 6-game unbeaten streak to start the month and the 6-game Saturday winning streak. So a couple of streaks ended. And then they made the tough trip over to Wheeling on Sunday for the 2 o'clock start. I don't know what time they got into town, but I would guess it was probably after 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So that's just rough. They came out and trailed 4-0 and 7-2 bus legs.
Yep,
they did
no doubt
make it back and make it a little interesting, but ended up losing 7-5. So I don't think anyone expected a whole lot else out of that game. You just hope that we could have maybe won one of the first two on that trip, because you knew that game in Wheeling was going to be really rough.
Yeah, but, and even Patafi mentioned it last week on the show that if you could play those games in reverse, start with Wheeling on Friday and then play the afternoon game against Kalamazoo or Toledo on Sunday, you'd be a lot happier with the odds of the weekend.
Yeah, so after the 0-2-1 weekend, we're now 10-16-3, but still 4-2-2 in December. And I think while the weekend leaves a sour taste in your mouth, if you you know, on Thanksgiving, if somebody said, hey, the Icemen are going to start 4-2-2 in December, take it or leave it, you would take it in a heartbeat. So still, you know, it's not the end of the world. Things are still in a decent shape, and now we got a bunch of home games coming up, which we'll get to in a little bit. But there's still opportunity here to turn things around and continue having a solid month and keep turning this season around.
I think you're starting to see the league settle down a little bit. The Icemen win 4 games at home. They go on the road. They lose all the road games. Wheeling won both of their games this weekend at home. And teams are just starting to get comfortable. They're starting to understand what other teams like to do, and they're able to implement that with line changes and all the rest of the home ice advantages. 2 months into the season, now you're starting to see it's going to be a lot harder to win on the road for every team in the league. So I think you're just starting to see just that natural settling in process.
Yeah, I agree.
Real quick, some last thoughts on our weekend recap. First of all, somebody on the Maniacs Asylum talked about, oh, if we only had Dan Gender still, because he had a goal for the Orlando Solar Bears. You know what? It's too late for that. No one complained one bit when that trade was announced. So there's no wishing or, you know, you can't go back. There's no revisionist history here on the Iceman Insights or Amusement Park Radio. If you did not complain the moment that trade was announced, there's no going back now.
Yeah, I think there were a few people complaining, but it was just a case of, oh, we like those guys. We don't want to see them go. And that's not a reason to hate a trade. If you like it or dislike it because of the hockey, cool. But
yeah, and again, I didn't have anything against Dan Gender, right. And I said that I liked the way Dale Mahovsky was playing, but I also understood the trade because Dan Gender was a healthy scratch for multiple games so that a defenseman could replace him.
Right.
That's like, you know, scratching Vogelhuber so I can go play right wing. That is the extent of the statement that Rich Kron was making about Dan Gender and how he was fitting into this club.
I wonder how much we would have to pay Kron in order to make that happen.
I have no interest in trying to make that happen. I'm just trying to show the different, you know, how much that statement made. Also, there were some questions about why did we leave Rob Medore in so long on Sunday afternoon, and someone on the Asylum, I think his name is Ben, brought up a great point, was that, hey, Dayton played 2 games on the road, and Medore was going to carry as much of that weight. Plus, Medore had 14-plus, 16-plus family members and friends in the crowd as well, so even though he's getting shelled, I mean, you just can't pull him after 18 minutes of hockey, so that, you know, mom watching him play, and you're going to be Captain Hook on him.
Well, and I think the biggest thing, though, is just Dayton had played both nights before. It was a grueling enough road trip to begin with, and then he saw a ton of shots on
Friday and he played great.
So there's no way, unless Medore gets hurt, there's no way Dayton is seeing action there. And I think actually that did happen late. Medore got stung by a shot at the very end of the game and was pulled briefly, and then Dayton came in, and essentially once the Icemen got it into the offensive zone, that's when they pulled him. But barring injury, there was no way Dayton was going to see significant time in that game, because after you play Friday and Saturday on the road, there's just no way you're going to have a guy go out there and try to play a third game in a row. That's a ridiculous kind of workload.
It'll be interesting, too. We haven't seen this happen yet with our 2 affiliates. When we break one of their toys, when we are sent one of these prospects for rehab or whatever else, and they get injured.
Yeah.
And that will be a whole nother interesting story.
Yeah. It's well, we do have a few of the guys. Oliver Gabriel is a Columbus guy.
Yeah, that's true.
But I
guess part of it, too, like if we if there's a question of overworking, right, or why is he out there in a 5-1 game when there's already been 6 fights and someone gets their eyeball cracked or whatever else, you know, it leads to an interesting potential in the future.
Yeah, that's especially with goalies. That's the prized possession.
Yep.
So if you ever have a goalie sent down and something, God forbid, happens and he gets hurt, perhaps in a situation maybe like that, an ugly type of game where it's getting physical and chippy and he's in and it's a 4-goal game late and there's a pile up in the net and he ends up blowing out a groin or a knee or something, then yeah, the affiliates might not be real happy about that. But Dayton actually is not Columbus property. I wasn't sure when he first got sent down one way or the other, but he's actually Springfield property only.
Oh, okay.
He got sent down basically because Springfield didn't have room for him, because Columbus does own the rights to Curtis McElhaney and Alan York. And if they want to see both of them playing in Springfield, then they're going to see both of them playing in Springfield. And then Springfield has to figure out what to do with Dayton. And thankfully, we had room for him, or kind of.
Kind of,
we have room for him. So that's
where Paul Karpowicz is too happy about having room for him.
Yeah, he's probably not one of those that thinks we had room for him. But so far, he's off to a good start. Dayton started the weekend 32 out of 34. And saved 4 out of 5 in the shootout on Friday, and then 42 out of 45 on Saturday. We lost that game 4-0 on the road, and he was named the third star of the game.
It's so amazing. And one of the questions I had for you is, we've got two games this weekend, Friday night, Saturday night. Dayton play both? Is Crum going to split them up? What do you think?
I would imagine we'll see Dayton in one and Medora in the other, unless Karpowicz is reactivated.
My guess, yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see Carpo Medor getting flip-flopped every week.
Yeah, so I expect, because Dayton started so well, he definitely earns at least one of the starts. Because Medor got shelled in Wheeling, maybe you put him back on reserve and bring Carp off. Not necessarily just because of how he played. Obviously, the team was a little flat in front of him, too. But partly because you just don't want to leave Carp on reserve that long. So, yeah, we may see kind of a week-to-week rotation between that third goalie slot as far as who's active and who's on reserve. But I don't know. I do expect Dayton to play one of the games and then probably either Medor or Karp in the other game. I wouldn't think with a two-game weekend you're going to see anyone play both games barring injury.
I could see Medor. I could make a case for Medor where he was the victim of some bus legs, and you don't want him to lose confidence, so you go right back to him on Friday.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be against that.
But with having 4 days off in two games and then 5 days off in two games, I could see Dayton playing both games at home right before Christmas because he gives this team the best chance to win right now, and I think Crum might really want those two games.
Yeah, and it may be one of those situations where you go with Dayton on Friday and if he sees a ton of shots or just doesn't look well, you don't go with him on Saturday. But if he plays well enough to earn the win and doesn't see 45 shots again, maybe you do go back to him on Saturday. Either way, if you have a guy like that at your disposal who can come in on the road and play that well right off the bat with a new team, I think it's proof that there's not a whole lot of drop-off from Alan York to Paul Dayton.
Nope. No, it was amazing.
So that's a very good problem to have a guy like that and debating whether or not to play him two in a row or just one out of two. But he was not the only guy over the weekend that made some waves with his stats. Obviously, we didn't see the games, but you can see the score sheets and see guys that made some hay while the sun was shining. And Kevin Baker was the first guy that I think we need to discuss, the one that was acquired in the Gender and Mahovsky trade. He went out and scored two goals in his first game with the Icemen. He's no Wade McLeod. He didn't score a hat trick in his first game. But he scored two goals on Friday. He had another goal on Sunday. So he's got three goals in three games with the Icemen. For those wondering, Orlando did play three games over the weekend. And in those three games, Gender had the one goal you mentioned and was a -2. Mahovsky was pointless and was -4. So not a particularly great start for them, but I'm sure.
Is there anything you don't know and or do not research? Oh, my gosh. I was all happy because I had like half a page of notes again, 2 weeks in a row, and I got the schedule out without pausing the broadcast.
And you haven't even read the schedule wrong yet.
Yeah, well, not on air.
Yeah, that's true. And we're not done yet.
No, we had a long way to go.
So, yeah, Dayton played well. Baker played well. Did want to mention Brett Ponich scored his first goal with the Icemen on Sunday. That was actually his first career pro goal.
That's awesome.
Last year was his rookie year in Peoria, and then he played a handful of games in Peoria at the start of this year, and he had only had 5 assists. So that was his first ever career pro goal, so that's cool. Josh Beaulieu continues to play well. He had one assist
on Friday.
Just
absolute stud.
He had 4 assists on Sunday. He still leads the team in scoring. He has 25 points in his last 23 games. So,
didn't he try to break someone's face on Saturday night, too?
I think there was
a little scrappaging out there.
I heard nothing of that, but knowing Beaulieu, that wouldn't surprise me one bit. That's the kind of player he is.
He is becoming We are getting to see the evolution, the development, whatever you want to call it, of a power forward.
Yeah.
Of a pro level power forward. This guy fights. He's tough. He's tough in the corners. He checks. He scores goals. 4 assists in one game. I mean, he's just becoming something special.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool to watch. That's the type of development that you like to see in a developmental league. A lot of times you'll see guys that are just kind of, you know, treading water, but when you see a guy like that, that over time you really can notice the difference in the way he plays and the development and the evolution of his game. It's pretty neat to see. And speaking of development and turning things around, Dylan Clark was pointless on Friday and Saturday, but then on Sunday he had another 4-point game. He had a goal and 3 assists. That's his second 4-point game and his 5th multi-point game in 9 games with the Icemen. So in just 9 games here, he has 15 points and is a +6 and is already in 9 games, 2.5 weeks basically, 4th on the team in scoring.
I was interested that the starting lineup on Sunday was Clark between Beaulieu and Vogelhuber.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Interesting shuffle of the lines, and apparently that line worked pretty well. Clark and Beaulieu had 4 points and Vogelhuber had a goal.
And they were all pluses.
Yeah.
In a 7-5 loss. And it's interesting, got to give you a little bit of credit, that Vogelhuber did on Friday night go right onto that third line. Beach became that 10th forward. Vogelhuber went on that checking line, played really well, real solid hockey with Kennedy and Dale. Yep.
Yeah. And also, one last thing on the topic of Dylan Clark. After we recorded the show last week, the ECHL announced that he was named last week's ECHL Player of the Week, which is cool and well-deserved. And something interesting about that, I don't know how many people really read those releases when the league sends it out, and then you get into all the gobbledygook about sponsors at the bottom, and people probably just tone out, but the ECHL Player of the Week Award is sponsored by Sherwood Hockey, and they are the official puck supplier of the ECHL. And because of their sponsorship of that award, anytime a player earns that award, the company donates a box of pucks to the local youth hockey organization.
Oh, awesome.
So, EYHA has a box of pucks coming their way in Dylan Clark's name because he was named Player of the Week. So pretty
and
cool.
I'm assuming by box of pucks, they mean a case of pucks. And a case of pucks runs anywhere from $150 to $200.
Yeah,
so that is awesome. And for the coaches out there, I mean, you end up losing. Pucks get shot out of the glass. You hand them to the ref. The home team has to supply pucks, and you might not get them back. And EYHA does a great job of making sure the coaches have enough pucks for their drills and games
right.
and warm-ups and everything else. So that is a nice gift.
And some of them just end up walking off via the old five-finger discount too. So
yeah, I got a bag of those. I'm not ashamed to say that I haven't garnered my own handful of pucks here and there that I've seen lying around with no one buy them.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those hidden costs too. People see one little puck and go, oh, well, that's not very expensive. But when you consider over the course of a season how many of them just disappear or get shot out and whatnot, yeah, you go through them pretty quick, and that is a kind of a hidden cost that racks up over time. So I'm sure EYHA will appreciate that whenever the pucks do arrive.
Real quick before we get into the special teams, I think part of the reason we saw the loss is this week the team headed off onto the bus without Sebastian Wanstrom and without Wade McLeod, and we saw the difference that they made the weeks before, and it's the way this team is going to operate. And I think instead of being mad about it, instead of blaming Rich Kram and his system, oh, his system's so wrong, which none of us even understand anyways.
For those of you who can't see, Derek almost did glad hands in the studio.
But what we can see is when you see players that are this good and then they leave the club, that's the kind of talent that this team needs for them to be successful. You got to take Kram all the way out of it. Kram can coach up, and he can coach up systems to try and hide some of those deficiencies, but that is the talent that we are going to have to look for in 1 to 3 year players, you know, rookies to 3 year veterans. So, you know, we don't want to get into the 4 year vets because that's capped. Anthony Nigro, we all like his speed. We like his style of play. 1 assist on the weekend, -4.
Yep.
And 6 games, 1 assist, -8. So there is the drop-off between Anthony Nigro and a Wade McLeod. And then, of course, we like what Kevin Baker's done, 3 goals in 3 games played. But that's the talent level that we're looking for. And I think Patafi kind of mentioned it too. Jim McKenzie is the plan is for him to be a big part of this club. He is going to be a part of this core club. It's what he mentioned last week when he was talking about core players. And I think he's taking one for the team right now with all the jostling and everything else. But I think McKenzie will be a part of this in the next few weeks.
I just wonder how. He's a veteran,
me too.
So how do you make room for him? Who's going to go out?
That I don't know, but he mentioned it last Wednesday. He was one of the core players that he mentioned, so we'll just have to see how that develops.
Yeah, I thought that when we traded for him, I think I said that on this show, that when we first traded for him, that could be a guy you keep around for a long time because he's got the pedigree. He's got numbers in the past and the veteran leadership, and you think you wouldn't trade for a guy like that if you just plan on cutting him once everybody gets healthy again. So it's a good problem to have six veterans counting him and Plante in the mix, but something's got to give. You can only have four on the active roster at a time. So who knows? We may see shuffling in and out of veterans like we're seeing with the goalies right now.
Now, when we brought in McKenzie, wasn't Robinson still on the IR / concerns about his knee situation?
Yes. When we brought him in, Todd was on reserve and Plante was on IR. So you had room to bring him in, and theoretically, you could even bring Todd back and still be able to keep McKenzie on the active roster. Ultimately, what pushed him off the active roster was
Kevin
trading
Baker.
For Baker,
yep,
because he's also a veteran. So then you've got another one in the mix.
I think that part was just a deal too good to be true to get rid of Gender. And again, nothing against Gender, but he just did not work here.
Right.
And Crom turned him into obviously a guy that came in and he's averaging a goal a game.
Yeah. So he's off to a good start. I don't know how you could sit him. You're not, as much as people may want to, Todd Robinson's not going on the bench if he's healthy.
Nope.
So that leaves Tatro or Matt Jens.
And they're both captains.
And they're both captains. And right now we don't have an excess of healthy defensemen anyway. So, yeah, I would like to see McKenzie get a shot to play a regular shift and see what he's got and see if he really can spark this team. But I don't know how you make room for him.
Yep. Good thing you're not the coach.
No, I'm not.
Speaking of coaching,
I still know more than Rich Crom.
That's right, because your system's better.
Right.
Special teams, and you gotta talk about that penalty killing. Fick talked about it on the radio quite a bit. They've been awesome.
Yeah, the PK's been excellent. If you look at the full season stats, they're only at 82.8%, which is in the middle third of the league, but that's because the team just didn't start off very well on the PK. Lately, though, the PK has been awesome. In December, they've killed 27 out of 29 power plays, which is a 93.1% rate, which is beyond excellent. So so that's you will take that all season long if they can somehow manage to keep that up, especially with this team's propensity for taking stupid penalties. If they're going to keep going to the sin bin for bad.
Well,
bad,
but that also kind of like reinforces, you know, hey, we can announce our presence with authority in every period. We can have Beach go out there and punch someone in the face
and just kill it off.
Yeah, because we're killing it off. So we could, you know, if people don't burn you on it, you can get away with it.
Don't put that idea out there.
I'm putting it out there.
People on the asylum will be wanting him to go out and punch the refs in the face.
Yeah, we've been through that with Mario Boliard, so we don't need to do that again.
Not good. But on special teams, as good as the PK has been, the power play has, shall we say, not.
Austin Medeski, where are you?
Yeah, no kidding. In the
you weekly, are our only hope.
In the weekly release that Terry Ficcarelli sends out, he said, and I quote, "The Iceman power play needs some bionic tonic and more notion and devotion to its motion." Translation, the
appreciate
power play sucks.
Yeah, I appreciate you translating that.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, what he said.
Yeah.
But it really is. Austin Medeski was really a turning point for the power play. I looked up the stats, and in the eight games Medeski played, the power play was clicking at 21.4%. In the 21 games without Medeski, 15.3%. And it's gotten even worse in the last few games. In the last 32 power plays, the team has only scored four goals, which is a 12.5%. So what do you do? What do you think is the key to turning this team around, short of getting Austin Medeski healthy again somehow?
I think that's part of it. I think they developed a power play system around the attributes of one player, and when that player got injured, they just haven't been able to come up with another person to play that role. So short of that, you think about redesigning it. I'm sure it was really dangerous. Half of it was Madejski, but the other half was that allowed Robinson to work off of that half board. Mm-hmm. He got to go on the wing, and the play went through Robinson. Robinson either passed down low for a backdoor pass to Beaulieu, who was screening in front, or he hit like Tatro cutting in backdoor. If that wasn't there, he gave it up to Madejski. And Madejski, if he had a shot, he took it. If not, it went back to Robinson. So the whole thing ran through Robinson. We can't put Madejski on a pedestal as much as I want to. Big lumbering defenseman with that sick shot. But it actually ran through Robinson. Now it's become more of a standard power play with 2D and everything else, and we're just gonna have to find a way to make it click more than anything. I think it goes back, we've been saying it all year, chemistry.
Yeah,
just need to find five guys out there that can score from multiple options.
Yeah, well, and I think the thing with Madejski is, even though the play still ran through Robinson, it worked better for him because of Madejski out on the point. When Madejski was there, a lot of times they would run a 1-3-1 instead of a 1-2-2.
Oh, yeah, it was an umbrella, definitely. Yeah.
So you've got Madejski out there at the middle on the blue line, and because he's such a threat, that spreads the four penalty killers out.
Yeah, really drew the two wingers out to try and block that shot.
And that opens up the passing lanes down low. So when you don't have a guy that's that much of a threat out on the point, the PK guys can kind of collapse down closer to the net, which gobbles up the passing lanes and really limits what you can do. So short of finding someone else to play that Madejski role, and I don't know
Brett
that
Ponich.
This team... Yeah, maybe
that's
Ponich
what I was
is
hoping.
Worth a shot. I don't know what else you do. Maybe you kind of use the same system but try different personnel. Maybe instead of putting a guy like Beaulieu, who is very good at what he does down low, maybe you just put a big guy, a Cody Beach, maybe even a guy like a Ponich down in the slot and try to screen the goalie and get garbage goals. Just send pucks on net and see what happens.
Beach does get some time, some power play time out there screening, and he's got some nifty little hands recently. So.
Yeah, and as long as he can stay out of the penalty boxes, you get to jostling for position down there, and you push a guy a little too hard, you end up nullifying the power play. So if you're going to do that, you end up being a liability instead of an asset. So that would be my one worry with putting him down there, but I really don't know. Barring having some defenseman fall out of the sky that has a cannon of a shot, which isn't going to happen.
Again.
Unless we get some really lucky send down from one of the affiliates, which could happen. That's what happened with Madejski. We didn't really have an answer on the power play, and then all of a sudden they send this kid down, and it's like, holy crap, our power play's good now. So, I don't know. Hopefully they can figure something out, but again, Rich Kron is smarter than us.
Yes.
So I would much rather trust him to figure something out than us sit here and try to figure it out for him.
One note about the PK, one thing to remember is a big chunk of this penalty kill unit that is clicking at 93.1% killing off opponent power plays is Todd Robinson and Matt Jens. And we talked about last week about you can't just look at a plus minus stat and say this guy doesn't play defense, because there's a lot more to it than that. And you can't, Robinson is minus 19, Jens is minus 15 on the year, but these guys are the crux of killing off of these penalties. Mm-hmm. So, and they don't get credit for that because you don't get any pluses or minuses on the power play unless you score a shorthanded goal.
Right.
So,
and that's where you just have to kind of use the eyeballs of watching what happens and see who's out there more often than on the penalty kill. The NHL keeps time on ice, and they break it down on power play time and shorthanded time and offensive zone time and all that stuff.
Which no one reads but you.
There are a few others, mainly Canadians, that do. But this league just doesn't have that kind of detailed stats because we don't have enough off-ice officials to do it. But I think it would be really interesting, should the personnel ever allow it, to see that kind of time, because I think that would actually enhance the league's ability to evaluate players for the higher levels, because there's so many things in those kind of secondary statistics that go to really evaluating a player more than just looking at a gaudy plus minus can tell you.
Cool. What's next?
Injuries and transactions.
Injuries and transactions. I loved the adjustment you made to IcemanManiacs.com, where you can click on it to see the roster, and you put like the handicap symbol and everything, and it's in red.
Yeah.
It's like alert, caution. That was a well-done graphic.
I thought it was fitting. I mean, it's been so ridiculous this year, all the injuries, so I thought... No color stands out better for emergency than red. So, yeah, and I wanted to make it easier for people to find. We talked about last week where you can find the updated roster and go to this and click on this and click on that and click on that. Just, now it's easy. Just go to IcemanManiacs.com, click on the only red on the entire page, and it'll take you to where you need to go.
Only red ever in the history of the website.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I hate the Detroit Red Wings. I'm very averse to the color red, but for this I'll make an exception.
Understood.
So... after 29 games this season, we're now up to 157 man games lost to injury, and up to 41 different players have played at least one game for the team. The good thing is, yeah, that's ridiculous, isn't it? 29 games in the season. The good thing is, we only know of one new injury this time, and it was actually before the weekend even started. Nathan Moon did not make the trip as... Rich Kram explained on the pregame radio on Friday, said that Moon was dealing with a groin strain that he had kind of been playing through, but since they had enough bodies now, they decided to let him stay home from the trip and rest it. So he didn't play any of the games over the weekend, but hopefully he'll be back soon. Also, Jesse Perrin did not make the trip, as Mr. Patafi revealed last week here on the amusement park. He was back home in Calgary attending a wedding. So the Iceman went with five defensemen over the weekend. That was the only two guys that we were without. Last week, the transactions, as we mentioned before, as we kind of broke while we were recording the show last week, Paul Dayton was sent down.
And you did, I wasn't able to do it. You have to show me how to work the technology. But if you listen to the podcast of this interview... from last week, you actually put the Jeopardy music in as we were organizing facts midst interview.
Yes, I figured that was somewhat fitting. And who knows, we may have to pause the show again at some point, and if so, I'll drop that in again. but yeah, Dayton was assigned on Tuesday last week. Then before the road trip, Karpowicz was moved to reserve, and Medora remained active. I don't know if Karpowicz was just a healthy move to there. On the radio broadcast over the weekend, Terry Ficarelli was saying that he was injured. When he rattled off the list of injured players, he mentioned Karpowicz's name. I don't know if he's actually injured or not, so that may be something for you to ask Patafi when you interview him this week. See if we can get some scoop
on that. My marching orders.
So, yeah, Karpowicz went to reserve. Medora stayed active. Trent Vogelbuehr, as we mentioned, he was activated from reserve. Sebastian Wahnstrom got called up, and Anthony Nigro got sent down. And then that was it. There were no transactions over the weekend or on Monday. This was the first time, I think, all season that we went a whole weekend and a Monday, because Monday's usually the cleanup day when they reassess things, that there was not a single transaction for the team. So miracles do happen.
They do. Right around Christmas time, Kram not staying up all night, and Chris Phillips filling out paperwork and everything else for roster requirements.
Yeah, so... we'll see what happens with the goalie situation. If he's healthy, we might see Karpowicz come back and Medora go back on to reserve this weekend. Jesse Perrin should be back. Also, as Patafi said last week, Aaron Jens may come back this week. And we only are at 19 on the active roster, so we do have room to activate him from IR without having to move anyone else. So we could very well see Aaron Jens back this week. And for once, we might actually have enough guys on the active roster that are healthy to have a truly healthy scratch. So that would be a rarity the way this season's gone. So that's all the transactions and injury updates that we have right now as of when we record this on Tuesday. So again,
I thought we weren't supposed to say that.
As of when we record this on...
at the time of this broadcast, I thought was our plug line.
Yes. Okay. At the time of this broadcast...
Until someone's going to be like, what? This isn't live? And they're going to turn us off.
Oh. I don't really think anyone
cares. Listens.
Yeah, or listens. I do. Speaking of listening, though, we do have to send a shout out to to our one and only listener in Kevinsville.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been all over us on the asylum.
I know. Just crying and whining and everything else. So
and
we've got to face him since we've got home games now. Yeah. So we better give him a shout-out.
We've got to get this in. So here you go, Kevin. Shout-out to Kevinsville, but we're throwing you under the bus for begging for it. So in true Iceman Insights fashion, you get your reference, but you're thrown under the bus. Enjoy the treadmarks.
There you go. Kevinsville, is that section 120?
I think, down in there, 120, 121, somewhere around there. It's behind the Iceman Attack Twice net.
Yes.
And it's kind of become a secondary asylum almost. They've been starting some of their own chants and stuff down
Beauty.
There. Which is good, yeah.
Is he also the one that starts the wave?
I don't know.
I'll give him credit for that.
If
we're throwing him under the
if it's him, we need to roll over him a couple more times with the bus. But, on the injuries and transactions, again, anytime, 24/7, if you want to see where things stand, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click on the red graphic, and scroll to the bottom of the page that it takes you to, or the last page. At this point, there's been so many transactions, that thread on the forum, I think, is about 5 pages long.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Go to the last page on that link and scroll down, and you'll see the latest roster with all the captains and call-ups and all that jazz. So that's all for injuries and transactions, and now we move on.
And now we move on to the best section, the best segment of our radio show here on Iceman Insights every week. Shockers. Hockey. Rock Song of the Week.
This week, because this is our final show before Christmas, anyone can play Trans-Siberian Orchestra or Jingle Bell Rock or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but I am not going to do that. I'm going to play a little classic. This song came out when I was 6 years old in 1987. This is off of an album called Twisted Christmas. It's by a radio DJ turned performer to some extent named Bob Rivers. He was a Seattle radio DJ. In fact, he might still be. But this is a funny little ditty about Christmas called The 12 Pains of Christmas. Enjoy.
The first thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me is finding a Christmas tree. The second thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The third thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fourth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
sending Christmas cards, hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills,
sending Christmas cards, hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The sixth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
facing my in-laws,
5 months of bills.
I hate those Christmas cards, hangovers, rigging up these lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The seventh thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
the Salvation Army,
facing my in-laws,
5 months of bills,
sending Christmas cards, oh geez, I'm trying to rig up these lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The eighth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
I'm a transformer for Christmas.
Charities, and what do you mean you're in-laws?
5 months of bills.
Making out these cards. Edith, get me up here, huh? Well, we have no extension cords.
I'm finding a Christmas tree. The ninth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
finding parking spaces.
Daddy, I want some candy.
Donations.
Facing my in-laws.
5 months of bills.
Writing out those Christmas cards. Hangovers. Now why the hell are they blinking?
And finding a Christmas tree. The tenth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
batteries not included.
No parking spaces.
Buy me something.
Get a job, you bum.
Facing the in-laws.
5 months of bills.
Yo-ho, sending Christmas cards. Oh, jeez, look at this. One light goes out, they all go out.
And finding a Christmas tree. The 11th thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
stale TV
parking spaces.
Oh my God, go to the bathroom.
Charities.
She's a witch. I hate her.
5 months of bills.
Oh, I don't even know half these people.
Who's got the toilet paper?
Get a flashlight at North Fields.
And finding a Christmas tree. The 12th thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me.
Singing Christmas carols.
Still TV special.
Batteries not included.
No parking.
Charities.
Gotta make them dinner.
5 months of bills.
I'm not sending them this year, that's it.
Shut up, you.
Fine, you're so smart. You ring up the lights.
And I need a Christmas tree.
And you are listening to Iceman Insights here on 96.9 FM, WYIR, the music bomb. We are with Michael Shockley in studio, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. Go to IcemanManiacs.com for all of your hockey interest needs. The only source, 24/7 in the city of Evansville, covering your Evansville Iceman.
Including these here podcasts, and this is our 10th one.
It is our 10th one. We've reached double digits. I thought for sure if we were going to get canceled, it was going to be after last week.
Yeah.
Talking about Stephen Rickard's testicles and everything else, I thought that was the doom of it. But
I think the fact that we haven't gotten canceled is proof that nobody's listening to this.
Trivia.
We're starting off trivia this week by throwing the dirty D under the bus.
I've already got my defense planned.
Oh.
Go ahead.
All right. So, last week we were talking about Rich Crum, and you said a couple times that he played 500 NHL games. And I am here to correct you, sir, because he is not nearly that seasoned. He only played 372 NHL regular season games, plus 36 playoff games, plus 288 AHL games. But that's still not 500 NHL games.
I was rounding up.
Oh, okay.
Because 500, 372 is closer to 500 than it is to zero. So I'm actually correct.
So we round up
correct.
To the nearest 250?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
to like mile markers.
Okay.
You gotcha. Can't say he played like 250 because he was way over 250. That's so true. He's in that 500 game area.
Okay, I'm with you. Well, and truth be told, he probably would have played 500 games, but for whatever reason, I don't know why, he retired as a player at the age of 29.
Bad knee? I think so.
Huh. That you'll have that. But yeah, he played 372 regular season NHL games. His best season was in 84-85 with Calgary. He had 20 goals and 32 assists, so he was a pretty solid player.
Yep,
had
he
those
was
kind
up
of
and
numbers
coming.
In the NHL. And then apparently, yeah, the knee did him in. Once he retired, his first coaching gig was as an assistant with the Cincinnati Cyclones, actually. Which I think Patafi's mentioned that before. I didn't know it was his first gig, but
yep.
But we knew that he had worked there before. But this is where the trivia starts to come in. Rich Crum is not the first Coach Crum in his family. Rich's late father, Bobby Crum, who died just a couple years ago, actually coached the original Winnipeg Jets. He coached them to the 1976 Avco Cup title in the World Hockey Association.
Wow.
The old WHA, which is the league that obviously spawned the Winnipeg Jets, and the Edmonton Oilers came from there, and a few other teams. Indianapolis had a team in the
yes,
WHA at one point, and that's where Wayne Gretzky began his pro career. But yeah, Rich's dad coached the Winnipeg Jets. While in Winnipeg, Bobby Crum coached the great Bobby Hull, and while doing that, Rich played youth hockey with a kid by the name of Brett Hull.
You are
Bobby's
amazing.
Son. Well, I can read Wikipedia with the best of them. But for those who haven't read Rich Crum's Wikipedia page, this is breaking news.
Yes, it is.
But
I am one.
Yeah. So after coaching the Winnipeg Jets to the WHA title, Bobby Crum went on to coach in the NHL. In 1978, he won the Jack Adams Award as the NHL Coach of the Year for which NHL team? And you're going to hold the sheet up to the light and see what I've markered out. Huh?
I'm just getting prepared for the next segment because I already know the answer.
Gotcha. What is the answer?
I'm going to go with the Detroit Red Wings.
That is correct.
Yes.
And did you know further that it was the first time ever that a Red Wings coach won the Jack Adams Award?
I am not surprised. I'm actually kind of surprised. I was going to guess the Red Wings because I believe Bill Nadeau, rink manager at Swander Ice Arena, knew that Coach Crum, father Coach Crum, had coached the Red Wings.
Uh-huh.
And I just heard that recently. So that's, but I'm kind of surprised because that Red Wing team stunk. 79, 80, 81. That's how they got the, they were horrible. That's how they got the first pick in the draft. That's how they picked up Stevie Y. So
yeah, they had the one good year where yep. he won the Jack Adams, and then they stunk for a few years and then started to reload.
So I wonder if I used to go out to Old Olympia with my dad and my Uncle Don back in 77, 78, 79. So I'll have to look in. There's a good chance I watched Old Man Crum coach.
Maybe. That was back before they had Zambonis, wasn't it?
No. Zamboni, it was cold in that old barn, though, let me tell you. I mean, I think that barn was built in 32 or something like that. It was cold. It was actually pretty miserable to be a kid. And my uncle had luxury box tickets, and the luxury box in Old Olympia, nothing like
luxury there.
Yeah, it was just basically a room with the same benches in there for watching the game. It was just walled off,
private.
Yeah, really high up in the air.
Yeah.
So, but
it's amazing how things have changed.
Yeah, I remember Rogie Vachon was the goalie. Is one of my memories from those old Olympia days.
Interesting. So, as we move on from our trivia, also on the topic of the NHL, I know there's been some talk off and on this season about, well, why haven't the Icemen brought in any NHL players, since there's other teams in the league are doing that?
Since Brian Patafi has Jerome Iginla, the greatest hockey player in the NHL, he has his cell phone number.
Yeah. There are a number of current, quote-unquote, NHL players in the ECHL this year. I think Alaska has four of them.
Joey Crabb, 12 goals, 18 assists, former Toronto Maple Leaf property.
Yeah, Brandon Dubinsky's there, and
Scotty Gomez.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are a number of them, and I guess there's been kind of this thought of, well, if we're struggling, why don't you bring in an NHL player? It might turn things around. When I talked last week about some of the things I talked to Crum about after Iceman Live. One of the other things I mentioned was asking him that. Why haven't you brought in any NHL guys? And it was just kind of a philosophical thing. He pretty much said he didn't want to bring a guy in mid-season at the risk of the NHL season restarting and just having the guy go away. He wants to build around guys that he thinks that he has reasonable belief that they're going to be here for the whole season. So he didn't necessarily close the door on should the lockout officially cancel the entire season, then maybe looking at a guy, but we would have to consider we already have a glut of veterans. So if he were to bring in an NHL player, if the lockout does cancel the whole season, it's going to have to be a young guy that doesn't meet veteran status for the ECHL. So that might kind of limit what your options are, because a lot of those kind of guys are already playing somewhere trying to get more experience.
Yeah, and we're starting to see throughout the NHL that a lot of the players are leaving Europe, leaving Russia to come back to help with negotiations. So it's about to hit. I still think the season's going to be canceled, but a lot of players are now starting to realize that they're going to be out a lot of money,
yeah.
And a lot of them are coming back here to talk and argue and debate and figure out if they can do anything to save this season. So
yeah, there's been a lot of talk lately about a drop-dead date, and I haven't really seen a firm date, but when talk gets to of setting a drop-dead date, sometimes that's when things happen.
And even like Brandon Dubinsky, I've been keeping an eye on because of Joey Crabb of that Alaskan Aces team, but he's still at 12 games played, so I don't think he's been playing much in the last month and a half. So
I want to say he was hurt.
Oh, okay. And that's another concern. I mean, you're a $6 million, $4 million player, and you come down here and have a Todd Robinson issue and blow out your knee or something.
Yeah.
You're hosed for – that could be your career. Yeah. So that's another concern just for them individually.
Indeed.
All-Stars.
Another topic of discussion on Facebook this week was...
You're not going into that whole Brad Perkins drama, are you?
No. Well, we're gonna mention that in a bit. Actually talking about the All-Star game itself. ECHL All-Star game is Wednesday, January 23rd in Loveland, Colorado. So the question for you, Mr. Benigni, is out of all the Icemen this year, there may not really be one that stands out. Who do you think most deserves to go? I've got some of the stats. Josh Beaulieu has 26 points in 29 games, but he's minus 8. Todd Robinson, 19 in 21, but he's minus 19. Nathan Moon, 16 in 19, but he's minus 7. Matt Jens has 14 points in 29 games, but he's minus 15. Kind of an interesting talk is about Dylan Clark. He's got 15 points in 9 games, and he's plus 6, but it's a small sample size. Maybe some of the dark horses that pass the eye test but don't have flashy stats. Jason Dale has 14 points in 29 games. He's a plus 1. Patrick Kennedy, 14 points in 27 games. He's minus 1. Trent Vogelhuber, 10 points in 19 games. He's a plus 2. I like all three of those guys a lot. I think if you're putting together a team that needs glue guys, those are the kind of guys you need, but those just aren't the stats that are going to get an all-star berth. So as much as I'd like to see Dale or Kennedy or Vogelhuber rewarded for their overall play, that's just not going to happen. So out of everyone else, who do you think you would pick?
Can I pick Cody Beach to announce our presence with authority to all the other all-stars, and he just goes out there and punches them in the head?
The first brawl in all-star game history.
That's just – and just – and every time they're taking him to the box, he just yells, "Whose house?"
Who apostrophe S house?
Yes. wow. I think for my vote, it would be Josh Beaulieu. Part of it just because of the production, part of it the way he plays, but also part of it, he's one of the few guys that's been in every game. Yeah. He's been healthy through the whole thing. So as far as I'm concerned, he would be my pick for Iceman All-Star of the Year.
I agree. That would be my first pick, too. I think as you get a little closer, maybe if Clark continues to be hot, you might consider taking him over Beaulieu. But right now, I don't see anyone else that is more deserving overall as far as two-way play. Yeah, his minus 8 isn't pretty, but considering the team's overall goal differential, there's not very many pluses on this team. So I think Beaulieu has had the best year of his career so far. He's on track for career numbers. And I think if the Icemen get a representative, and I'm not sure how it works in the E. I don't know if every team has to have one or not. But if he does, if we do need one, I would send Beaulieu too. I agree with you.
Also, the vote for Brad contest after numerous letters and letters back from the ECHL. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's
just ridiculous.
It's been a little ugly.
It has been.
It seems like things have settled down. The deadline is at 11 o'clock Central Time tonight, Wednesday the 19th, because we're live.
There you go.
And the winner will be announced on Friday. For those who haven't paid attention to all the drama, there was a whole big hullabaloo about the girls from Stockton were buying votes, maybe not them directly buying votes, but someone was buying votes on their behalf. And every time Brad would get close, the Stockton girls would miraculously gain 100 votes in a couple hours.
And I think part of it was that number, 100.
Yeah, it was like always 100. So the ECHL ended up looking into it, and the company that was running the vote did an audit of all the votes, and they discovered, yes, there were votes purchased, and they basically threw out all those purchased votes. And in the end, the Stockton girls lost over 700 votes. So right now, as of the time of this recording, Brad has a pretty safe lead of more than 300 votes. I don't think there's any way the Stockton girls are going to catch up, but you never know. So if you're listening to this and you have not yet voted for Brad, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click on Brad's face paint clad noggin at the top of the page. It'll take you to a link. You can vote for Brad and help send our favorite cowbell banging face paint wearing hootin' and hollering, rock and roll part two singing maniac to Loveland, Colorado in January to represent the Icemen at the All-Star Game as the ECHL's number one fan.
You forgot arrogant and thinks he's a hockey god.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's so full of himself.
He is.
Boy, you get him away from the rink and he just can't stop talking about himself.
I actually reffed his kid on Sunday.
Did you?
Yes,
know?
In the league. So.
Yeah, and you know, in all seriousness, for people that haven't talked to Brad away from the rink, it's a complete 180. Away from Iceman games, he's the quietest, nicest guy. It's like he's like kind of like enforcers on the ice. The enforcers in hockey are usually the
teddy bears,
quietest, nicest guys on the off the ice, and Brad's kind of that way too. He's the enforcer of the asylum, but you get him out of there and you could just sit and chit chat with him
He's
not nearly as crazy as you might think.
Yeah, and he's very nice in the asylum as well. Yes. He's just banging his cowbell and has got his face painted and he's leading the dances and everything else.
But yeah, and he really is a great ambassador for this team.
He definitely
when you
is.
Have a guy like that carries the banner for the fans of the team, it's there's a reason why he's legitimately winning that vote, because he truly is the ECHL's number one fan.
He is. Upcoming games, two home games, and finally a home stand. Brian Patafi can do his laundry at his own house.
Yeah, no kidding. We've won four games in a row at home, and hopefully that will continue, because after the three games and 3 days on the road, we now return for six in a row at home, which is the longest home stand of the season. Looking a little further out, we also play eight of the next nine and 11 of the next 14 at home leading up to the All-Star break. So this is time to make a move.
Yes.
If the team is starting to get healthy, if you can find some consistency and some chemistry with the lineup, you never know. This could be a time. You got 11 out of 14 at home. There's no reason to think this team can't win, I don't know, 8 to 10 of the next 14 games before the All-Star break. And if you do that, you might find yourself right around the eighth playoff spot with a chance to really gain some momentum after the All-Star break and solidify things.
I agree.
So yeah, this weekend starts the six games. It's a nice little tidy back-to-back at home. Using the ECHL definition of a week, which is Monday through Sunday, this is the first two-game week for the X-Men since the week that straddled October and November. So it's been a while since they've had a nice short little week that doesn't have three or four games crammed in. So, and if it feels like we've played a lot of games, it's because we have. Only South Carolina has played more games than the Icemen. The Icemen have played 29, and South Carolina's played 30. Everybody else has played 29 or fewer. So it's been a jam-packed schedule.
As close as we are to playoffs with our points, even the last-place team can reach us with the games in hand that they have.
Right.
We're playing better hockey, but we've also played a lot of hockey.
Right, yeah.
And in fact, I think Trenton's one of those teams that we have like seven games in hand on them or something
like
that. Yeah,
we've got a bunch of games in hand on some of the teams that we're trying to chase down. So while you want to look at the points as they are now, really the thing to look at when you look at the standings is the win percentage. And the ECHL definition of win percentage is really points percentage. How many points have you earned out of how many points were possible? So if you go 1-1-1 in a three-game set and you get 3 points out of six, your win percentage is 500. And that's really where you can gauge how the team is playing overall, because you may look and see that you've got 4 points more than a team that's behind you, but if they played five fewer games, they have a better winning percentage. So that's really where to look to gauge how things are going to play out as far as the playoff picture. So until we really start leapfrogging teams in winning percentage, there's nothing to crow about yet.
Yeah, but we're rocking a 3.97 win percentage.
Yeah.
Which is below both Orlando Solar Bears and the last place Wheeling Nailers.
Maybe we should stay in last place, try to get the number one pick and draft Andrew Luck.
I like it. Except for that Andrew Luck, we need to draft Jerome Iginla. There's a good chance the NHL ain't playing next year either.
Yeah, good grief.
He can sleep on my couch.
So Friday we play Trenton. They are 10-11-4, so that's a winnable game. Saturday we play Kalamazoo. They are 11-12-3, and we've had some successes against them. Not last weekend, but we have had some success against them. So these are both winnable games. They're at home. Like I said, the Icemen have won four in a row. Maybe we can start a new Saturday winning streak on Saturday against Kalamazoo. Worth noting, Santa Claus will be in attendance at both games this weekend.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Friday, the Icemen are giving away 500 Santa hats. And Saturday, they're giving away 500 Christmas ornaments. And they said Iceman Santa hats and Iceman Christmas ornaments. I'm not entirely sure what they'll be designed like. I don't know if the Santa hats will be blue instead of red
or
how that's going to work. But only 500 each night. So if you want the freebies, get there early. Doors open at 6 for 7:15 starts. So line up outside. And even if it's cold, it builds character to stand outside in the cold.
Also Friday night, your Evansville Thunder Bantam travel team will be playing a scrimmage against the Evansville Midget travel team.
Really?
After the game. So really? Friday night after the post-game season ticket holder on ice shenanigans with the Scoro puck and everything else, they will Zamboni it, and they will be playing a scrimmage free for everyone that's still remaining in attendance.
I would actually prefer that they Zamboni it with the post-game people out there embarrassing themselves, being a disgrace to the ice.
And yourself truly, the Dirty D, will be one of the two referees for that game. Yes, indeed.
So you're going to be in attendance watching the game?
I will be in attendance watching the game, and then I will suit up like my hero Maddie Spaeth in the referee locker room. And I will do my actual first. I've done Iceman inter-squad scrimmages on the Ford Center ice, but this will be the first game that I've officially refereed on Ford Center ice. So,
cool. It's always fun to ref games in a building like that.
Yes.
Well, I ref for 7 years when I was younger, and I'll never forget one of the first years I refed, I did a game. This was an Indy. I refed a Mike game at Market Square Arena when it was still standing, which was, of course, the home of the Indiana Pacers in addition to hosting hockey from time to time. So there's this Mike game going on, and we're all waiting. Myself, my refing partner, and the kids from both teams are waiting to get into the building. And we're waiting in the lobby, and there's, I don't know, probably 30 or 40 kids, like 7, 8-year-olds, standing there. All of a sudden, while we're waiting to be let in walks Rick Smits.
Oh, wow.
Who, if you remember Rick Smits,
yeah, 7'6".
He was the Duncan Dutchman. Yeah, I think he was listed at 7'4", but I think he was even taller than that. So there's all these kids that are, you know, three and a half feet tall, and in walks this giant man, and he walks through, and all the kids are, whoa, you know, just freaking out that this giant dude is walking through the crowd. And it was just one of those cute little memories that you have from, you know, he looked down in a big, deep voice, "Hi, kids," and it was like Andre the Giant had just walked in or something. But he walked in, and he was going to work out or something, but... But you never know what'll happen when you're reffing or playing a scrimmage or a game at a major arena like that. It just kind of has a different feel to it than when you're at a recreational rink. So,
and it's also good for the kids. That's the best thing. Yeah. You get some kids or some teenagers like this weekend will be with the midgets and the Bantam Travel, and have a lot of fun and experience to remember.
Yeah, it's really cool. Some of my favorite memories as a kid from reffing and also playing on the Market Square Arena ice. So considering that was the same ice. Not physically the same ice, but metaphorically the same ice that Wayne Gretzky started his pro career on. That's pretty cool to be.
Mark Howe played on
there.
That team as well. Son of Gordie Howe that played with Philadelphia. He logged some time in Indianapolis.
I'm sure that at one point Mark Messier played there too, because he played for the Cincinnati Stingers, and the Stingers and the Racers played a lot. So he probably played there as a visitor at one point.
One thought I want to get your input on for this weekend's game. There's been a lot of chatter on the Maniacs Asylum. We like to throw some of them under the bus. But one of the good points, we have just seen numerous giveaways in front of our net, and it hasn't changed with whatever goalie, Rob Madore, Alan York. We've had some definite defensive zone breakdowns, and I think it is one of the struggles of this club. And I'm not ready to say Rich Crom and his system. I'm also not ready to say it's the players, but we definitely have some defensive zone issues that we are struggling through. Matt Jens, minus 15. Daniel Tatro, minus 8. Jesse Perrin is a minus 5. But on the flip side of that, you got Ponich, who's plus 4, and Foam, who's plus 1. So I don't know if it's just we need Anton Blomqvist and that big size out there, but that is one thing I will be watching specifically this weekend, is to see what changes we're making with D pairings, if we're going to simplify things back there, maybe have some more icings just to try to relieve some of the pressure. Your thoughts?
Well, I think on the topic of the turnovers, I think that's gotten a little better as the season's gone on. It was really bad the first few weeks of the season, and it's kind of settled down a little bit. I think part of that is just guys adjusting to the speed of the ECHL. They can tout, oh, double-A hockey is double-A hockey all they want, but there's no question there is a difference in the speed of the game in the E as compared to the C.
If you've seen, there's been a couple of posts about the Brian Bicek issue, about him being traded to Phoenix or where Arizona yeah. and him refusing to report. And there was another player who tweeted and screen captured, put on the Maniacs Asylum, about how this league is a joke and this team is a joke. So that might have been Adam Russo. I'm not sure.
The former
goaltender. Yeah. And so, yeah, there is a difference between these two leagues.
Yeah, and I think it just takes time for guys to adjust to that, because when you circle back behind your net to pick up the puck and try to start a rush, you look up and you're used to things coming at you and the play developing at a certain speed. And when that all of a sudden is amped up 20-30%, it completely changes the way you have to read the play, adjust, react in X amount of time. And if you're used to doing it one way, and then all of a sudden you have to do it another way, it makes a big difference. And it just takes time to get used to the style of play and the speed and the systems you see in a different league. And I think we're starting to see guys get a little more used to it, and thus the turnovers are they're not gone, but they're being minimized compared to how it was early in the season. Mm-hmm. And that will, over time, I think, help guys maybe keep their plus minuses in check a little bit, because we're not giving away as many garbage goals where we're just handing them the puck right in front of our own net. But yeah, there are clearly problems on defense. This team's just given up a lot of goals in general. And part of it is just the chemistry of guys coming in and out and guys getting hurt and guys getting called up and blah, blah, blah. We've said it over and over again. It's a tired story at this point, but it's still the valid story. And until things really settle down and you can roll out the same three pairs of D for 2 or 3 weeks in a row, it's probably going to keep being that way. Because as much as it takes time to adjust to seeing how guys are coming at you, it also takes time to adjust to who you're playing with. And you got to know where that guy is going to be, and if you have an outlet that you may not have with another player. So it's one of those things where it's a product of the situation and all the moves and all the injuries. And until things settle down, we may not see a significant change. And that's just part of the territory.
That is true. I have a final thought for you.
Oh, do you?
The other day, my beautiful daughter, who's been on the radio show a couple of times, accidentally, she said, "Dad, can we go to the movie theater to go watch a movie?" And I said, "No, Dad, we can't." Or, "No, Ivy, we can't."
You're talking to yourself.
Daddy has to go to work. And she said, "Well, then, I'd just rather be with Michael Shockley." So,
very nice.
Michael Shockley's star is still, I think you're higher than our Christmas tree star at the top of our Christmas tree.
Is she still counting down to our as of yet unscheduled Iceman Insights sleepover?
No, you've been replaced by a figure skater, former Icicle Victoria.
Ah.
Now everything is, Victoria should come over and watch Christmas movies with us, and you and Mommy can go away and Victoria will watch me. So,
well, I'm sure Victoria's prettier than I am, so that gives her a big advantage, but maybe it's just because Ivy hasn't seen me lately.
That could
be out of sight, out of mind.
So,
never know.
There's a good chance you'll see her on Friday.
Good. So, other final thoughts. I just wanted to mention, for anyone wondering about how this show is going to work over the holidays, we will be doing a show next week, which will air on Wednesday, the 26th, the day after Christmas, or for you Canadians, Boxing Day.
Beauty.
And then we will probably not have a show the week after that, correct?
Yeah, I'll be driving back from Augusta, Georgia, so it's not going to be possible.
All right. So we'll have a show next week. We will not have a show the week after that. And then once we get further into January, we should be back on a regular schedule. So be prepared to have your fun Iceman Insights next week. But the week of New Year's Day, we will be off. I am hoping, if time allows, to put together a story kind of recapping the first half of the season for IcemanManiacs.com. So if you hop on looking for the podcast, at least you might have something to read. I know reading is so taboo these days. God, jeez. But hopefully there will be something there. If not, don't hold it against me, because I have a 14-month-old and time is of the essence.
Yes, and there's travel and there's family and there's Christmas and there's Christmas parties, et cetera, et cetera. It's a busy time of year.
But, one last thing I did want to mention also. On Saturday, the game on Saturday is a Subway family night. It's one of only two that they're doing on Saturdays this year. So if you can't do Sunday games for whatever, religious obligations or otherwise, there are two Saturdays that are Subway family nights this year. It's this coming Saturday and then also on February 2nd. And again, if you're not familiar with Subway family night, for just $12, you get a ticket to the game, a small soda, a small popcorn, and an Iceman t-shirt. And considering the fact that the cheapest ticket, unless the upper bowl is available, is $15, that is a whale of a deal.
Because I think popcorn is $4.
Yeah, and the drinks are $3-4.
Yeah.
And, well, granted, the ones you get that are free are tiny, but still, it's something.
Yep.
And you're getting the ticket for less than face value to begin with. So, and you don't have to purchase them in blocks as a family either. You can just buy one and get that deal. So yeah. So it's a pretty good deal. You can, I think you can get them at the box office, but if you want to get them in advance, you can go to Ticketmaster, and I think the password for buying them online is Subway. Go figure.
Crazy.
I know. They really think outside the box. So, Friday and Saturday home games. We will do a show next week. We won't do a show the week after that, but this is our last show before Christmas, so Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
If you don't believe in Christmas, then tough. Merry Christmas anyway.
That's just the way it is, because we're in the amusement park. You've been listening to Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans. Check out all of his stuff at IcemanManiacs.com. You can also find he's got an Iceman Maniacs Facebook page as well.
Indeed.
So, and that'll be it for 96.9 WYIR Music Bomb for this week's installment of Iceman Insights.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.